And welcome back to Unicorns and Hand Grenades, everyone. My name's Jax, and my co-host Kim and I are rapt that you've chosen to join us in this series of real and raw conversations that we'll be having with each other and our guests, where we explore the nature of being human and embracing life in all of its brutal magnificence. We hope you enjoy this ride as much as we enjoy bringing it to you. So let's get into the conversation. And welcome back to Unicorns and Hand Grenades, everyone. Now, I say this at the beginning of every single conversation about being super excited to have our guest here. And today is absolutely no different. So we would love to welcome to the show Genevieve Mora, also known as Jen. Hey, Jen, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Oh, yay. Excitement seems to be the theme all around with these convos, which is really cool because they're deep convos, but they kind of spark that spark, hey? And just to let our listeners know a little bit about Jen, and she'll tell you the rest herself. She's a woman who has found out what she stands for and what her mission in life is early on, which I think is incredible, and we'll explore more of that soon. And she's taken that and she's thought about how does she use that to help others. So in 2014, she co-founded Voices of Hope with her friend Jazz Thornton. Shout out to Jazz. And Voices of Hope was founded with the purpose of sharing their lived experience to support other people going through mental illness battles and to shine some light and share some hope so that they knew other people had survived, and not only survived, but could thrive out the other side of it. She's also a co-creator of Love Your Kite. And we'll learn more about both of those organizations as the conversation evolves. But let's just get into it. Kim, I'm going to tag you.
Thank you. Welcome, Jen. Really excited to be having this conversation today. So I guess for us and for our listeners, it would be great to get some background and I suppose hear about your story and what's brought you to this point.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm 26 years old. I don't think I'm that old, but I've lived a lot in my 26 years. And for me, I was kind of a happy child. I grew up with really loving parents. My parents are still together. My life was kind of picture perfect. There was nothing wrong with it. But around the age of 10, I started really struggling with anxiety. And I take it back to a moment. It's kind of where I pinpoint the beginning of my journey. And it was a news item that I saw. So I walked into the kitchen one night to ask Dad what was for dinner, as I do every now and then. And there was a news article or a news piece, sorry, on the TV that really caught my eye. It was quite gruesome, quite graphic. And my little 10-year-old brain really held on to that. And so from that night forward, before I went to bed, I'd check under my bed, I'd check my cupboards, I'd check my curtains, I'd check my doors were all locked. And very quickly, that was not just once. It wasn't just twice. It was happening multiple times before I was allowed to go to sleep. So when I say allowed, I'm doing little quotation marks because that's what my mind told me. And so my anxiety was really picking up, and the way that I was managing this anxiety was engaging in these behaviors to get that sense of relief, or at least that temporary sense of relief. And I lived really close to my primary school, you know, a couple of doors up, but I was too scared to walk to school alone, so my mum would have to walk with me. And it just kind of progressed from there. So these behaviors that were happening just before I went to bed started taking up, you know, periods of my day too, before I left the house, before meals, etc. So around the age of 12, which I don't think really was a surprise to my parents and probably myself looking back, I was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. And I didn't know much about it. I think like everyone, I assumed that OCD meant you were really clean and tidy and afraid of germs. And I was like, well, that's not me. I don't care. I'm an absolute mess. My room's so messy. And so it took a little while for me to understand what it actually meant. And my OCD was around counting and checking and repetition and occasionally intrusive thoughts too. And so it was a lot to deal with as a little 12, 13 year old, and actually earlier than that when I look back. And I think that gave me a perceived sense of control for a period of time through my anxiety or over my anxiety. But very quickly, it was taking up, you know, sort of hours of my day, every kind of behavior or thing that I to do, you know, brushing my teeth, brushing my hair, having a shower, everything had a little routine or ritual around it. And I think, you know, my mind went looking for something that I perhaps could control or thought I could control. And at that point, it was food. Turns out I was in complete complete uncontrol of what I was about to, you know, embark on. But my food intake decreased and my exercise increased, and I just became a lot sicker, and then was eventually diagnosed with anorexia nervosa. So I kind of see it like one thing piggybacked on top of the other. You know, eating disorders often work with comorbidities. It's not uncommon that the sufferer has experienced OCD and anxiety in, prior. Or with that. And by the time I was diagnosed with anorexia, it was kind of like the bottom. I was kind of already there, and I was admitted to hospital, Starship Children's Hospital, which I credit for saving my life. Absolutely incredible place, or as incredible as a hospital environment can be. And I had a really long road to recovery. I was in there for 3 months and then went back in for another 6 weeks. And then I had two stints in the adolescent psychiatric unit. And then I was the first ever patient at what was known as Thrive, which is a residential and day program in Auckland. It's now called Tupu Ora. But I started on the day it opened, and I was there for 6 months. So I missed a lot of school. I started doing online school. And at the end of the day, you know, my health and recovery was the most important thing. And so I had to give everything to that. So yeah, a lot in my lifetime. But around the age of 18, I, you know, finally felt well again. And I had my spark back, which is awesome, because I think everyone was missing that. And every day, you know, I consider myself recovered. I'm very, very well. But every day I continue to get stronger, as we do as human beings. And I just feel almost fortunate to have gone through what I went through in a really kind of weird way, because I wouldn't be the person I am today, and I wouldn't have the job I have today had I not been through that.
Thank you for sharing. And it's so interesting how we often, like listening to you, we often sometimes feel a little bit, and I'm just referring to myself, a little bit guilty about going, I'm so grateful, you know, because it feels weird to, like you said, to be able to say I'm grateful, because I think we're always the person that we are. But as we start to get our universal car crashes,
yeah,
it just starts to open up and unveil more of who we are. So we kind of actually come back home to our true selves, and we're always in there, right? And listening to you, there's a couple of really key themes that come through that I think would be really cool to touch on for our listeners. You talked about the perfect childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes for people listening who have been through journeys that are tough, we can sometimes look back on our childhood and go, well, you know, I didn't have the right to be sick or to not be perfect. Or, and the other thing was control. And so regardless of what the diagnosis was, you didn't have control, but what you were doing brought control to an uncontrollable situation. And I think that's a really similar theme through life as well. What are your thoughts around that control, controlling the uncontrollable for people?
Yeah, it's such an interesting one, because, you know, I never want to give the idea that, you know, choosing an eating disorder, because you can't just choose them, is going to give you a sense of control, because that's not the case at all. It's this really false sense of control. I don't think there's anything, you know, positively controlling about the fact that you can't go out and have lunch and dinner with your friends, and you cry at every meal, and you know, hit people and get frustrated. That's not a life to be living. But I think for me, I guess it was just kind of a last resort. I was so hopeless. Everything felt so out of control. I think it happened. Your mind's a really powerful thing. I continue to learn that, but it happened without me actively doing anything. It just kind of became the reality for me. And now looking back, you know, I can see little things along the way and I'm like, oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. But yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of people struggle with the lack of control. And I think the last year with COVID's proven that for a lot of people, you know, increased anxiety and change and uncertainty. And when you're an already anxious person, that only becomes more and more prevalent. So yeah, it's a really interesting thing.
Yeah. And hearing you, it sounds like the control isn't actually control. It's our minds tricking us into thinking we're in control in an uncontrollable environment, which is an important point to make for people. Thank you. And man, you're right. Our minds are so powerful. Now at the place you are on your journey, what is it that helps you? I think of the mind as a chattering teeth. How do you kind of tell it to shut up and go to, what's the other place you go to for truth when your mind's going crazy?
Completely. So I think for me, the reason I talk about or feel so lucky for what I went through is because I have this whole wellness toolbox that I can draw on in moments that I need it. So I'd be lying if I said I don't get anxious. I still struggle with anxiety from time to time. don't enjoy flying. So if I'm on a plane, I'm usually an anxious mess. You know, I do worry about what people think of me at certain times. So that's something I still experience. But I have this toolkit and I have these coping skills that I can use. And so I find drawing on them in those moments is incredibly important. I know in terms of like specific things, gratitude is really important to me, journaling. I'm very lucky to have, you know, parents that will sit and listen. And so I often go to my mum and just pour it out on her and she kind of sits with me. And I think when you're struggling or you're experiencing anxiety or whatever it may be, the most powerful thing is just feeling heard. And so when someone just sits there and listens to you, not necessarily giving advice, it's such an incredible feeling. So yeah, I feel really lucky to have those tools in place. And now I'm in a position I get to share those tools with others. So it's even better.
Oh, your parents sound amazing because it's really
very lucky. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really helpful to have parents that are on the journey with you. And both Kim and I have got children. And I think of when my son was younger and the same thing when I was younger, so often in trying to do our best for our children, we will reassure them. And by reassuring them by going, well, don't be so silly. This wouldn't happen. Look at this. We're almost not allowing them to be seen. Yeah. Because the anxiety and the thoughts are what they are. So trying to make them feel better by saying, don't worry about it, is just
shoo-shooing it. Yeah, I guess it's like validating how they're feeling, isn't it?
Yeah. Sounds like your parents really see you, Kim.
I wanted to ask you about Voices of Hope, and I was hoping you could tell us a little bit more, please, about that.
Yeah, definitely. So Voices of Hope originally launched in 2014. Myself and Jazz Thornton launched together. We were connected through a mutual friend and it all came about, you know, this is a very summarized version, but we became Facebook friends, as you do. We were connected through a friend and Jazz very sadly lost another friend to suicide. And so she posted a status about it saying, you know, rest in peace, enough's enough, this is just like heartbreaking. And I saw that and something within me was like, I need to message this girl. I don't even know if we'd talked at that point, but I messaged Jazz and I was like, I'm really sorry to hear this. I've experienced my own battles. I didn't tell her what. I kept that very private for a period of my life. But I said, you know, I really want to do something about this. And so Jazz and I continued chatting more. I was back and forth from America at that point, and so a lot of it was done online or on Skype. I don't think Zoom existed at that time. And we decided, you know, we needed to do something. And so Jazz and I both had a passion for kind of the film, television, media industry. And we also had some connections of people that were higher profile in New Zealand at the time, you know, musicians and stuff. And so we decided that as a starting point, we could sit down with these people, as well as you everyday, I was going to say normal people, but that's not the right word to explain them, everyday people, and just hear about the battles they'd been through, but focusing more on how they got to where they were now. And so it started off really small, just like using our friends, you know, network, immediate network, and all was well. And then I don't know if you've seen Jessica's tree, but Jessica passed away. Which was just awful. And I was moving back to the States. There was just too much going on for Jazz and I to give Voices of Hope the attention it deserved. And so we pulled it down. And it was a hard decision to make. I think Jazz and I both felt like we had failed. And I think overcoming that was really important. I think we almost felt like people were waiting for us to fail. And by closing it, we were, you know, giving people the satisfaction that we started something and it didn't work. But we continued to stay in touch. And then Jazz, without actually telling me, applied for a grant in December of 2016, I think it was. And we ended up winning it and launched again in 2017, which with much more kind of support and structure and purpose by this point. And we were extremely passionate too. By that point, I was much more open with my own experience and my own story. So long story short, Voices of Hope exists as something Jazz and I wish we'd had when we were younger or when we were unwell, a place to turn to find hope and inspiration. We believe that there's, you know, such a powerful thing in terms of hearing lived experience stories and voices, because when you do, you feel safe to share and speak up too. So we create video content, we run campaigns, we have blogs. It's just kind of almost like an online hub, predominantly online, where people go to know that whatever they're going through, they can get through. And so we feel so lucky to wake up each day and get to do this work. It's pretty awesome.
And the neat thing about that, sorry, Jax, was that you talked before about your mum and dad and the important role that they've played for you in terms of feeling heard as you're going through these things. And some people don't have that, but now they have you and they have this forum where they get the support that they perhaps don't have in their personal lives or through the other networks, which is a really, really special thing.
Yeah, we feel very lucky. I think Jazz and I are very clear on what we do, don't do, and we don't do. Like, if we could reply to every message, it would be a full-time job. Like, we'd love to be able to, but what we do is we help and give people hope on the masses. We don't work with people individually because we don't have the experience, the training, the capacity to do so. But there's nothing more special than receiving a message from someone saying, you know, your story's made me feel less alone, or I feel heard, or thank you for sharing. You know, it's such an incredible, incredible tool. You know, it's really powerful sharing that lived experience voice.
Yeah. What for you was the thing that pulled you to sharing your story for the first time?
Great question. So Jazz shared her story a lot earlier than I did. When I actually came out and shared my story with the world, we'd already been running Voices of Hope for a little while. So I'd been getting people in and I'd been asking them to pour their hearts out and be vulnerable and share, but I wasn't in a place that I felt safe to do so yet. And so I almost felt, traitor's not the wrong word, but almost like I wasn't, you know, pulling my part of the equation or the weight, whatever the saying is. And I remember lying in bed one night and thinking about all the reasons I didn't want to share my story. And it was the shame. It was the guilt. It was the kind of, you know, I had this perfect life. What have I got to complain about? It was the fear of labels, fear of judgment. And I was like, you know, if I'm feeling this way, then other people will be feeling this way too. And I almost felt responsible. I was like, I'm working in this space where I'm asking people to share their story. The responsible thing to do would to be put myself out there and share mine as well. So Jazz was a huge supportive person through that process because she'd done it prior to I doing it. And I ended up doing it on quite a large scale. So it wasn't just kind of like, here's my story, I'll post it as a Facebook post. We created a video for Voices of Hope that went quite viral overnight. So I went from no one really knowing to people all over the world knowing and news articles and this and that. But although it was kind of one of the scariest things I've done, it was the most incredible thing I ever done. I worried so much about the labels and the judgment, but all I got from it was, you know, messages of support and thanks. And, you know, I'm going through this too messages. And so, yeah, it was a really incredible step and I have never, ever regretted it ever. So it's awesome.
Oh, that gives me goosebumps listening to that. It's kind of that thing you talked about how you and Jazz came together, like there was just a pull that you had to contact this person in inverted commas on Facebook, right? And I think a lot of times when we can step outside of our head and into our purpose, we start to follow the pulls a lot more. But man, that vulnerability is tough. That's been one of my biggest Achilles heels for most of my life, and it's somewhere I'm now comfortable going, but to have the vulnerability to share your story in that way is impressive. But look at the ripple effect that it's had. Hey,
no, and I think I've been able to do so much more and make such more positive impact now that my story is out in the open. I wasn't ever as nervous or afraid of talking about the anxiety and OCD. It was always anorexia. It was like a swear word. I wouldn't mention it, wouldn't talk about it. I moved to the States to go to drama school for 2 years and none of my friends there knew that I'd gone through this. So obviously when I came out with my story, they're like, whoa, we didn't know. But there was something about it that made me feel physically sick, just the whole word, the experience, the shame. But it's so cool to now be able to stand up in front of groups of people, whether it's at a school or a conference, and proudly say, I had anorexia and it sucked, you know, like, and just to be able to be open and honest. And I think the more I share, the more comfortable it becomes. You know, I'm very comfortable. I'll be out and I'll start talking about it with the waitress or whoever it may be. You know, I'm very open about it now, but it's definitely been a process to getting there.
Yeah, it sounds like you've moved beyond the place where your story identifies who you are and you know who you are beyond your stories. Yeah.
Completely. And I think that was part of the sharing my story. I felt a sense of closure and like I was reclaiming, you know, my past instead of my past having the power over me, which I think I needed to do because it took so much from me. I felt so much shame, like I've mentioned multiple times. And so by me going, actually, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to share and show you who's boss, it was really a really healing process for me.
Yeah. The sharing of stories is healing. Kim?
I saw a post that you had shared a little while ago, and it was your letter to your younger self, Dear Jen. And I read that and it was very powerful. And as I was reflecting on that, not only was it powerful in terms of you being able to share your experience to impact on others, but tell me about how powerful that was as part of your own journey to write that letter to your younger self.
been really healing. So through Voices of Hope, there's been a few opportunities like that. That was actually a campaign we did to, it was called Dear My Younger Self. And we also did a campaign where we wrote a thank you letter to someone that had supported us through our journey. So through both of those processes, it was healing. It gave me a chance to reflect. And I think I also knew by doing that, I guess my hope was that people would read that. You know, I do have young followers and they'd go, okay, you know, I might be going through this, but I can get through this. And so I think overall, it was really healing. I've always found writing an incredible kind of tool. I think it's, you know, when you get your words out on paper, they're out of your head. And it's just kind of like this release of everything. And so I found real comfort with writing on paper. So I think for me, it was just, a sense of closure and pride. I think I often talk about, and Jazz says the same, like ourselves sitting in the psych ward, they wouldn't even imagine what we'd be doing today. Like they would probably tell them and they'd be like, yeah, whatever. You know, the fact that we're doing what we are now when we were so, so unwell, you know, 10 years ago, whenever it was, is something that I think they'd be really proud of. So in everything I do, I almost do it for my younger self and my younger self that didn't think she'd ever be able to do this sort of stuff again. And I constantly have these wow moments where I'm like, wow, I just did that. Like, for instance, when I was really unwell with my eating disorder, you know, I'd have to have meals at certain times and certain foods because that was how my brain was working before I, you know, started the recovery process. And then like yesterday I was hungry, so I pulled over at a gas station and got a sandwich. And it's just moments like those where I'm like, although I've been doing that for ages, they're still like, wow, how cool is that? Just to be able to do that, you know? So it's that reflecting that I find really healing as well.
And I love that you can be present in that moment, right? Because it's not the big things sometimes that bring us the biggest joy. It's just being present in gratitude and celebrating the things like that, which are big, right? But so often when we're zooming around in life, we just don't have our radars out for that. And yeah, I think that's a really special place to be able to go.
Yeah.
And I think there is something when we start to share our journeys or when we start to move beyond ourselves, right? And we think about what can I do to impact others, and you have a really clear line of sight to how you want to help. We all, and I know Ram Dass says this, but it's like we all walk each other home. So you put yourself out to help. I know with Kim and I, we started this podcast to make raw and real conversations normal and just to get them out there. But we've learned so much in this journey as well, right? So in being of service, we connect into that thing that is the same in all of us. You know, it's that cosmic stardust that runs through all of our veins. It's the, I call it in my woo-woo way, you know, the love, peace and connection that we all are beyond our identities or our journeys or our stories. And so what I want to ask you is, you mentioned before that you and Jazz would both look at yourselves 10 years ago sitting in a psych ward and go, wow, you know, who is that person? What is that journey? If I get you to do a little bit of futurescaping, and I put you 10 years in the future, what would you want to let yourself now in this room know?
Oh my goodness, what a question. You put me on the spot.
Oh no, we have lots of on the spot and silence and reflecting our podcast. So it's all good, Jen.
I think for me, I tell myself, I think probably the biggest thing would be to trust the process. You know, I'm the co-founder. I've recently taken over general manager of Voices of Hope. Running a charity is hard work. You know, you're constantly looking for funds to be able to do the work. You're constantly, you know, getting people on board and trying to create these campaigns and advocate and make change. And so I think a big thing would be just to trust my purpose and not give up on what I'm so passionate about. I think again, you know, I'd tell myself not to sweat the small stuff. I think, you know, I still, there's moments where I'm like, oh, this is so major. And there's a quote I love. It's, you know, if it's not going to worry you in 5 weeks, don't let it bother you for five more minutes or something like that, you know? And so it's not sweat the small stuff. Continue to be kind to those around you and like constantly remind people that you love them. Obviously, if you do love them, but I think it's such an important thing. And also, you know, pick up the phone and call your grandma. Make sure you do that because she's probably not going to be here in 10 years. And I think it's really important that I keep those connections and, you know, continue to connect with those that mean the most to me. So, yeah, it's a great, great question. I'll probably have a million more answers after this call.
That's Awesome. So that's a pretty impressive answer, though, to stay the course because it is your purpose. So by default, the rest of the stuff is small, right? And stay connected to the people you love and let them know.
Yeah.
And in that, I hear as well that you're continuing to grow. So as long as you can focus on that purpose for your next 10 years till you get to that future gen, it's just going to be this amazing evolvement. And I think it's almost cool that at your age, you started up Voices of Hope, you experienced what it felt like for it to fail and to feel like you might be judged, and you came back to it and it worked. Because I think so often people will hold themselves back because the timing has to be right and it has to work perfectly, and I can't get egg on my face, what will people think, right? But you've lived that experience, and it doesn't look, here you are back, internationally renowned, making all of these ripple effects for people and changing lives. And if you'd given up after that first shutting it down, you know, where would we be, right? So that resilience, man, that's a good lesson to learn at this point in your life.
And we're always learning, you know, it's not easy. It's a heavy job, but we love it. And we continue to grow as people each day, and we're constantly learning. I think that's been an important thing, especially for me. And I don't want to speak on behalf of Jazz, but I imagine the same too, is, you know, we're not perfect. We don't have all the answers. We're growing, you know, at the same time and constantly learning and developing and finding out new ways to support others. And it's really exciting. I like that aspect of it, that it's never always going to be the same. You know, it's ever changing.
And on that subject of ever-changing, Jen, how have you found, as you've grown, the people around you have moved? Because in talking to you, you know, you feel like an old soul. You've been through more than most in your life, right? And that changes how we interact with people and how people connect to us. What's that look like?
I think my family have always really grounded me, not just my immediate family, but my, you know, extended family. I'm very loved and supported, and I've always just been Jen, even when I was unwell, even now, you know, with a larger profile, not that it's massive or anything, but they've never thought of me as anything different. I'm just, you know, the niece Jen or the sister Jen or the daughter Jen. I get treated exactly the same. And I think for me, when I look at my friends, I was really lucky because I left school for a period of time. When I came back to school, my friends were so excited to see me. I think they really tried. I isolated myself. So they'd say, can I come visit? And I'd make up excuses. You know, it was more of a me issue than a them issue. But just having people around me, and I think something I've learned a lot over the years is it's way better to have, you know, a few small close friends than a large group of, you know, acquaintances. And it's the people that celebrate the successes with you, but also kind of are there when things don't go right. So I've got a few beautiful friends that, you know, I can go to if I'm having a really good day, but also if I need to talk about something that's gone really badly. And so just staying connected to those people and focusing on the relationships that uplift me, inspire me, is really important. I often talk to people when I'm in schools especially, and I say, you know, if you're walking away from lunchtime or your group of friends and you're feeling judged or deflated or less of a person, then you need to weed that garden and find some new friends, because it's just not worth your time. And I think friends change, you know, as I've got older, you know, priorities have changed, and I'm in a really weird line of work. I think for me, for a period of time, I really compared myself to my friends in terms of, they did high school, which most teens probably would. They did high school, they went to university, they got a job, they're buying houses. Whereas my journey was completely different. You know, I missed a lot of high school. My year after high school, I was catching up on the year I missed. And then I worked for a couple of years, and then I went to drama school. And I think it really taught me that everyone's just kind of on their own journey, and you just have to focus on what you're doing. And there's no right way. Again, I almost feel lucky that I've gone through that crappy time already. Not saying everyone will experience a crappy time, but I'm stronger because of it. And now I can just go on and live my life and hopefully not face anything like that again.
Yeah, that's part of the gift, hey? But at least you know the core of resilience and the lessons you've learned. You've got them there. They never change, right? The essence of that strength will always be with you no matter what hits. Kim, what's coming up for you?
A few things. And one of the things about that journey is now you have this wellness toolkit that you talked about before that we don't necessarily have until we do go through something that really fundamentally changes our life. And so regardless of what happens now, you have a whole different pool of resources that you can draw from and share with others. Yeah. And that leads into me wanting to ask about, because you're not busy enough already, Love Your Kite and the app that you've been involved in creating. And if you can tell us a little bit about that.
I can. So it kind of started in a couple of different ways. I've been running eating disorder support groups. They originally started in person about probably 18 months ago with a dear friend of mine, Millie Thomas, who's a recovery coach from Australia. So she'd come over every 3 months and we'd run an in-person group. And then COVID hit, and it was almost like the silver lining of COVID was that we moved our groups online. And so we run them on Zoom once a week, free of charge. Me and Millie just do it because we think it's necessary. And it's a really powerful, you know, hour that we get to share and they get to ask questions. And I think, you know, a lot of the conversations that were being had in those groups was the lack of access to care, you know, people being turned away from care, people feeling like they're not sick enough and then being turned away. So it being reinforced that they're not sick enough. And it all, again, just kind of happened at a perfect time. I downloaded, or whatever you do to get LinkedIn. I got LinkedIn, I signed up, and a lady called Hannah messaged me on LinkedIn. She's like, I've got this wellbeing app platform that I think could be really beneficial for people with eating disorders. So Hannah has created one for mums, for new mums. And from that had had some feedback saying, you know, this could work for people with eating disorders, obviously if the content was altered. And so she messaged me and I was like, oh, this sounds too good to be true, but whatever, I'll jump on a Zoom call. And I did, and she explained it to me and she took me through the app, and I was like, this is so cool. And so we've only known each other, I think it was kind of mid last year. But the way Love Your Kite works is it's broken up into modules that we call kites, and each kite covers a different topic, like social anxiety, connecting with your friends, connecting with family, navigating holidays, you know, things people experience an eating disorder may struggle with. And it's user-led, so you kind of pick what's relevant to you. And then each day you get a really kind of simple, manageable activity, with the idea being that all these activities, you know, help build your wellness toolbox and also help you on your recovery journey. So there's things like practicing gratitude, there's things like creating vision boards. It's not medical in any way, so although we had medical oversight, the like application itself or the resource itself is very kind of holistic in the way that it's, you know, very beautiful and supportive. And the way we've kind of described it, it's like a friend in your pocket. I think for us, or for me specifically, you know, I was very lucky to be able to see a dietitian and a psychologist. You know, I saw them say once a week each, but it was the moments between that I was like, I need some tools. What am I doing? And so to be able to have this thing that's kind of on the go and with you whenever you need it to reflect on has been really, really important. And I actually received a message from a mother yesterday, although it was made for those experiencing an eating disorder. She's a mother of a child with an eating disorder. And she said, this has been so beneficial for me too, because it's helped me understand more and also created some sort of connection between me and my child, because we can work through these activities together. So I'm very proud of it. I'm very, very proud of it. We're having some exciting conversations at the moment in terms of getting it out and about in the wider world. But, you know, with the very limited kind of push we've done, we've got 900 users. And if that doesn't show me the need for more eating disorder services, I don't know what does. So yeah, very proud of Love Your Kite and everything it's doing and will continue to do.
Oh, as you should be. Hey, Jen, are you okay if I add another thing that your older self can tell your younger self based on what I just observed?
Yes.
Your older self should tell yourself now, actually, keep following those pulls. You know, timing is right for a reason, and you keep getting pulled for the right reasons at the right time. So I reckon if you're that connected to that compass now, keep it's linking into it.
First time I've kind of reflected in this way, and it does seem like when you're like, so how did this happen? Well, I was like, funny story, it kind of just came out of the blue. And I guess it's just jumping on those opportunities. And I guess that's an important life lesson. You know, sometimes it may not go to plan, but my mum used to tell me, you know, take that leap of faith. What's the worst that can happen? And so just kind of trusting the process and learning from it if it doesn't go to plan, but obviously making wise decisions and hoping for the best.
Yeah, and maybe not going to plan is the plan, right? Because the plan is for you to be doing what you're doing now and to continue evolving that way, because that's a real key theme that comes through with you. And there's a question I'd like to ask you, because I've been through this myself, and Kim, I don't know if you had, but you talked earlier about as you were recovering from anorexia and you come back and your friends all wanted to come and see you, that you almost self-isolated. And I think that hermiting and that isolation is a really important part of the healing journey. I really do. I know it has been for me, but there's almost this point where it's good to let people in. And that's a hard point to kind of pick up on when vulnerability's not been a muscle you've stretched for a while. So what did that look like for you, that moving from that isolated healing to gently allowing people into that space? And what would you have done differently, if anything?
I think going back to school definitely helped because I was suddenly with a lot of people. That was a very slow process, though. I started kind of going for half a day and then a full day and then, you know, three quarters a day, whatever it may be. But I think for me, what I found really helpful was, you know, starting with my core group of friends or one of my core group of friends, my best friend, whoever it may have been, and spending time with them one-on-one or two-on-one or whatever it may have been, just to kind of get comfortable. And I think also it was just as much a challenge for me as it was my friends, because they had this very unwell, who was now in a much better place, but still, you know, not recovered, friend. And so for them, figuring out how to navigate conversations. And I talked to a friend recently and she's like, we never knew if we should invite you out for dinner or not. And it's little things like that, you know, that my friends also went through a process. I know a couple of my friends were really upset to the point that they wouldn't come and visit me in hospital because they were just so kind of traumatized by the whole thing. And so can you repeat the question again? I've gone on a complete tangent.
No, it was a perfect, there is no tangent. It was a perfect answer. It's just how you allow that coming out of isolation and people connecting back in with you.
And I think I just had to, again, like the quote that I talk about the most in support group, the support group people are probably like, shut up, I've heard this a million times. But I always talk about, you know, the only way out is through. And so I think in order to overcome fear, you have to face it. And so a lot of that was just, you know, what I've been doing throughout my journey. I was having to face things that terrified me every single day. And although seeing friends became something I was perhaps scared of, the only way I was going to get through it was by doing it. And so putting myself in those, you know, vulnerable situations and saying yes to the party that my friends invited me to, or yes to the movie outing, was part of that healing process and kind of that reintegration with my friend group.
Yeah, Kim, your head was nodding vigorously with the only way out is through, because we hear that and say that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that I've noticed through our conversation, which is really awesome, is it seems like you're excited about a lot for the future. And I know there's some wonderful things happening, but tell us a bit more about what's coming up for you or what you're feeling excited about at the moment.
It's such a cool thing to feel excited. Like, obviously I have days where I'm like, oh, I feel overwhelmed, but to just feel excited about life is the coolest thing, because for so long, you know, I'd wake up in the morning, I'd be like, I don't want to wake up tomorrow. I want to go to sleep and wake up when this is all over, sort of thing. And so to actually, you know, dream a bit. Dreaming's always been a huge thing for me, and putting some plans in place. And, you know, I've got ideas. I want to go and travel more once COVID lifts. And there's definitely, in terms of kind of work, voices of hope. You know, we've managed to do so much with not a lot of funding and, you know, just support from like volunteers. And we're slowly building our team and getting some more funds on board and growing as an organization. I just think there's still so much potential for growth there. We're doing some cool campaigns this year, which is super exciting. And I think for me, I want to see, you know, the eating disorder space change in New Zealand. There's been a lot of articles over the last couple of weeks covering stories of individuals, family members, you know, I was going to call them institutions, but, you know, psych wards, hospitals that are caring for these individuals. And it's like at crisis point, it can't go on. And so for me, it's so exciting to know that there is so much potential for change, and hopefully I get to be part of that change. And I wake up each day with the purpose to create change and to help others. So I think the unknown excites me now, whereas before the unknown completely freaked me out. But, you know, I've started a mental charity. I have an application. Like, nothing's going to stop me. I'm going to go and, you know, again, what's the worst that can happen? It doesn't work out. So I have lots and lots of dreams for the future. But yeah, and I feel very lucky to do so.
Oh, and I think also, you're not just a part of it. That space I've just heard you talking about, that's the Imagineering space.
Yeah.
It's people like you in that Imagineering space that help make change happen, like you drive the change. So that's cool. And how will you keep supporting yourself to have that expansiveness to be able to keep Imagineering and stay excited? What's in your toolbox for that, Jen?
What's my toolbox? So I know something for me, as of about, it was probably 8 months ago now, I started going back to therapy. So I go to see my therapist once, it's usually about once a month, but more if I need it, less if I don't. But I find just having those regular appointments extremely helpful. I'm like an advocate for therapy. I'm like, if it was free and, you know, everyone had access to it, then they should definitely jump on that bandwagon. And my therapist has been the same one that I've had since I was 15. And so, like, he knows me warts and all. And so it's really cool now to go to these appointments and not talk about my illness, but talk about more everyday life things, you know, like stress of work or whatever it may be. So that's really important to me. I also have a supervisor that I soundboard off, which I find extremely beneficial, especially working in this space, because it's quite heavy. And I think at the end of the day, another quote, you can't pour from an empty cup. So I have to always put myself first in an unselfish way. You know, self-care is not selfish. So making sure I'm prioritizing time for myself, I'm hanging out with my friends, I'm putting boundaries in place. And I think a big thing which Jazz and I've had to learn along the way is like, what are we responsible for and what isn't our responsibility? Because it's so easy to feel like everything is your responsibility and the weight of the world's on your shoulders, but it's not. And so reminding ourselves that, you know, we are doing so much and there's only so much we can do, and not feeling like we've let people down or something's gone wrong if we can't respond to a message or be at a talking event or whatever it may be. So I guess it comes back to that fact that I'm always learning and growing as a human being.
Yeah, and setting boundaries and deciding what the big rocks are for the work that you're doing. There's a leadership exercise that we often do, and it's called the big rock. So it's about prioritizing. And if you put all the gravel and the sand and everything in a jar before you put the big rocks in, you can't fit everything. But if you prioritize what the big rocks are, then everything else kind of filters itself out, which is important.
A big one for me. I'm very much a yes person. I get terrible FOMO, fear of missing out. I want to be part of everything to the point that I'm like, I've got too much going on. I'm too stressed. So like for the last sort of 6 months, it's been really about kind of being okay with saying no to things. And again, another quote, I am honestly like, I could probably talk to you for an hour in quotes. I heard something the other day and it's like, when you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. And I think it's about, again, prioritizing what you value more, what's more important to you, what you're going to get more out of, but also what the person on the receiving end is going to get. And so just kind of being okay with saying no and not feeling like I have to be part of everything and not worrying that I'm letting people down by saying no, because actually the only person I'm letting down by saying yes is myself. Remembering that is important.
That's a really good filter to pass things through for sure. Kim?
I think what you touched on before about self-care is really important too, especially when we're doing this work, which feels like it's our purpose and we're really excited and driven by it. But, you know, like you said about pouring from an empty cup, is we still have to put that in for us because we can't put our all into what we're doing if we don't take care of ourselves. And, you know, that's something that we all constantly need to be reminded about. And it doesn't need to be huge, great things, but it can be little moments in our day. But self-care underpins everything, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Health, wellness, all of it, and making sure that we can put our best work out into the world. So I really liked that. I think that's a really important thing for us to remind our listeners and ourselves about too. Mm.
Definitely. Hey, clothing line. Yes. Tell me about that, because I saw your little modelly shot on the Insta.
We launched the clothing line, I think it was a week ago on Wednesday. And the idea of the clothing line is we've been having, well, like our followers, we call them our community, Voice of Hope community, have been asking for merchandise for a while. And we're like, we could do merch, but let's do one step ahead and, you know, actually get a Voices of Hope clothing line, which is super exciting. And all profits go back into Voices of Hope. And there's been some feedback and some tension around the fact that we are restricted in the sizing that we've been able to start with. And we've tried to make as clear as possible is that it was never our intention to exclude or hurt people, but as a mental health charity or as a charity in general, we had very little funds to get this off the ground. And the idea being that, you know, we get this first run out, we get some funds from it so we can continue to grow and be more inclusive as a brand. And so I guess for us, what we've said is when people buy this clothing, they're helping us raise awareness and getting people to talk about mental health, but they're also enabling us to continue to do the work we're doing that is saving lives. And I think it's a really cool thing for us to see people, you know, it's the same about the journal. When we've seen people holding our journal, when we start seeing people wearing our clothes, it's just like, it's incredible. And knowing that every person that is wearing that item has directly helped, you know, Voices of Hope grow. And that's something we like to talk about as well, is that although Jazz and I started Voices of Hope and we're the, you know, the founders or the co-founders of it, our work wouldn't be nearly as impactful as it is if we didn't have this community around us sharing our post, interacting, getting involved, asking questions. So it really is a team effort. So yeah, the clothing line's very, very exciting.
Yeah, they look really, I'm going to get on and have a shot because they look really, really cool. And I think that's important as well. And that is part of the filtering, like listening to you, you're a charity and therefore commercial viability is even more important. The onus of it sits more on your shoulders because you don't have all of these funds to play with and putting out the clothing line. You can't make a vast amount of every size range initially. It's a journey. So,
and that's been a really difficult process for me. I've personally had a lot of flack over the last kind of week as an eating disorder advocate, not having a size inclusive clothing line. And that's really affected me, and I almost expected it and wish I could have done more about it and feel responsible and like I should have. But at the end of the day, you know, Voices of Hope, Jazz and I again found that there's a larger team. We've got a board, we've got people in place that have helped us make these decisions. So it's not a reflection of us as individuals. It was done for the best, well, not for the best, but what we could do for the charity. And so at the end of the day, you know, we just have to be honest and open. And I'm willing to say, you know, that I don't want to say I messed up because we did what we could do and what we needed to do. But I am aware that we have unintentionally excluded some sizes because we couldn't, you know, cater to everyone at initial drop. But like we've always said, we're going to increase that and hopefully make everyone feel included as they should. I hope that makes sense. It's been a really interesting process to navigate.
Yeah, and when you're going through that, like when you're in that situation where there's criticism or people are making comments and you know the intention behind it and you understand there was never a decision to not include, how do you stay grounded through that? How do you keep reminding yourself that this is the purpose, this is where we're at? Because, you know, that stuff, it is challenging to deal with.
I'd be lying if I said I haven't found it really hard. It's the first time Jazz gets it on a larger scale because her profile is larger. It's one of the first times I've kind of experienced it to that scale. And it did. I spent hours and hours crying. You know, I was like, I'm a human being at the end of the day. I feel. And I guess what I felt the most is that I'd let down a group of people that need support and that were already vulnerable. And that was really upsetting to me. I think at the end of the day, like, it's just reminding myself that we always had the best intentions. It was not our intention to hurt or harm or exclude everyone. We did what we could with the funds that we had. And we were open and honest about it from the beginning in terms of, you know, sharing on our stories and our Instagram that we were going to grow. Our clothing line was going to expand, you know, a number of items, but also, you know, cater to more sizes. And so it was just about you having conversations. Like, I've had a lot of conversations with people over the last week, not looking for reassurance, but just pouring my heart out and saying, you know, this is what's happened. This is how I've experienced it. I've been made to feel like a terrible person, and I know that I'm not because I've tried everything I can. But I've learned a lot from it too. You know, I think at the end of the day, there's always going to be people that pick you apart, unfortunately. And I know that they're just advocating for themselves and people like themselves, perhaps. But we did what we could, and it wasn't a pure decision on my part. It was a team decision, and we thought about it a lot, but like you said, it wouldn't have been commercially viable as a starting point.
Yeah, and I think to put some perspective on that, if you're okay with me doing that, is that the people who are upset, everyone's in their own story, everyone's in their own journey, everyone's in their own phase of healing, and everyone has their own lens on. But what I'm hearing from you is that the launch of the clothing line has been done in a phased way, so you can actually lift up the group of people that you're looking out for, right? And that's the reality, and everyone will see it through their own lens, and that's okay. But it feels tough, right? Because we're not...
Most people have understood that, and, you know, yeah, we've had way more support than we have had, you know, not support. And again, I think it's important for people to advocate and share their opinion. I'm not one to, like, cancel people and block people because they don't agree with my ways. But yeah, so it's been definitely a learning curve, but it is just the beginning, and we've stated that from the beginning. Exciting to see the brand grow as we do financially and as a charity as well.
Yeah, us too. Can't wait to watch and see what happens with that. And conscious that we're going to set you free out into the world shortly because you've got places to be. Mm-hmm. A question that I want to ask that I hope will be very helpful for our listeners, especially those who are parents or friends of people who are on their own journey around whatever their mental illness is, so whether it's anorexia, whether it's anxiousness, how can they best support their person?
Yeah, I got asked this morning, and my answer is always similar. I think, like I said before, being heard is one of the most powerful things. I think when you're supporting someone, it's so easy to want to give advice and to kind of fix them and wrap them up in cotton wool and you know, make sure they're safe and all right. But I think just allowing the person to know that you're there to listen if they want to talk. I think, you know, if you're a friend or a family member, offering to, you know, go to appointments with this person can be really helpful. I think having support there can be incredibly, you know, beneficial, and not judging. I don't think you have to, you don't pretend to understand that you know what they're going through, because you don't. Everyone's experiencing, you know, things differently, but just being there, being empathetic, and showing them that you care and you want to see them well. I know I often talk about the fact that my parents and those around me held hope for me until I found hope within myself. And I think that's a really powerful thing. My parents didn't wake up every day and be like, oh, great, we're so excited, Jen's definitely going to get better. They had moments where they thought I'd be like this forever, but they never showed that to me. They always put on a brave face around me. And were determined to not let this illness kill me. And so I think holding on to that hope and believing in me is one of the most powerful things you can do for those that you are supporting. Just believe in them, that they can get through it, that they will get through it, and just be right by their side.
Man, that's one of the most beautiful things I've heard, holding hope for me until I could find hope myself. That hit me straight in the heartstrings.
Quote I saw, and I often refer to it, I can't remember who it's by, but I just think it's so, so beautiful. Because it can be hard to find that within yourself. But I think if you start seeing people holding that for you, you do start to find it yourself.
Yeah.
So it's a really incredible process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm winding up, Kim. What do you got before we set Jen free?
Oh, so many. You know me, I'm a note taker during these conversations. I really am appreciative of you and all the work that you're doing in the world. I love the comments that you made about trusting the process, and I guess coming from a situation where a lot of it was about perceived control, to saying the unknown excites me, you know, in terms of that for a journey is a pretty incredible place to get to, and that we continue to learn and grow through our lifetime, that our experiences are ones that grow, shape, and change us. And, you know, the importance of self-care, boundaries, and responsibility have come through for me is really important in our discussion today. Another thing that I'm going to go and have a look at after we have our conversation is the friend in your pocket, because I'd love to have a look. I'm going to go and have a look at Love Your Kite, because I think that's just such a neat way to describe something like that. And then hearing that feedback from the mother who's found that so helpful for her, what a wonderful thing. What a wonderful piece of feedback for you to get. So thank you for sharing all that you have experienced and are doing, and that excites you with us today. I've certainly taken a lot from our conversation, and I'm sure our listeners have too. So thank you.
Thank you so much. It means a lot to me.
Yeah, me too. And keep imagineering, Jen. Yeah. Just keep imagineering. Keep opening up and trusting that you're going the right ways when you get pulled, because it hasn't set you off yet. And the universe will provide your little soul pot around you to help you get where you need to be, because you're making a difference and the world's better off for having you in it, helping people. And thank you for your time. For people, if they want to find... we'll put it in, we'll put it on our Instagram posts and story and stuff, but
I'll give you my address. No, I won't. www.thevoicesofhope.org. You can also check out www.loveyourkite.com, one or the other. Just Google Love Your Kite.
Yeah, we'll put it in the notes.
Thank you. And then also you can just find me on socials at Genevieve Mora, and the same as Voices of Hope and Love Your Kite. And yeah, I'd love to hear from you.
Fantastic. And finishing up, what can our listeners do to help you?
What can you do to help me? We're always looking for stories to share. So if you have a lived experience story and you want to share it and be part of our writing team, we'd love to hear from you. We're looking for more writers at the moment. Go and buy some of our clothing. Check out our journal. It all goes back to Voices of Hope. And remember just to stay strong.
Fantastic. Stay strong. What a great way to finish up. Thanks everyone for listening. We're appreciating you sharing the space with us, and we really look forward to you joining us in the next episode of Unicorns and Hand Grenades. Go forth and slay your day.